I went down for a blood test this morning. And in the waiting room, there was a big TV screen. Alternated little bits and pieces of TV shows with advertisements for the blood test company. And one of the advertisements had a woman reading a letter that was supposedly from her heart. In other words, the blood test was a message written from her heart, telling her that she had to get her life in shape, and how much the heart wanted her to live long enough to see her grandchildren graduate from school and get married. And I kept thinking, your heart doesn't care at all about your grandchildren. Or about how long you live. It just pumps away when the conditions are right, and when the conditions are not right, it doesn't ask permission, doesn't send a letter saying goodbye, it's been a nice life, nice time together. It doesn't care. It gets clogged up with cholesterol, it doesn't care. It's healthy, it doesn't care. It just does its thing. We're the ones who care. And we latch on. We like to think that we have a special arrangement with our bodies. Other people's bodies get sick. They're not in good shape. Well, we take good care of our body. So we think the body owes us something and is grateful and will do things for us in return. But it doesn't. It knows nothing at all. It's good to think about this. It's one of the reasons why we have that chant so often on the different parts of the body. This is all the body is. And what does it mean? What does your liver mean? What do your tears mean? Some of these things mean something to you, but in and of themselves they don't mean anything. And yet it's because of our concern for the body, our attachment for the body, that other things have meaning as well for us. The things we want to keep it good-looking, the things we want to keep it comfortable, well-fed, well-sheltered, they have meaning for us simply because of the body. If the body were not hungry, food would not be attractive at all. What is this? Muscles of animals, plants growing in the dirt. It's because the body needs to be fed that we find these things attractive. So it's good to step back from the body a bit, or step back from your attachment to it, and realize how many of your other attachments depend on it, and how meaningless it is in and of itself. This doesn't mean the body's no good at all. After all, without the body we couldn't practice, but it's seeing that as the essence of the body, the good that you can do with it. That's an important shift. Otherwise, we're like those people I heard about in Salt Lake City. There was some company there that had figured out a way of freezing you when you die to keep your body the same all forever once it's dead. And the people were signing up, and someone went to ask them, "Why are you doing this?" And there's one person who said that she'd been putting so much energy into keeping her body fit, and she didn't want to see it go waste after she died. Again, what meaning does that have? Either you're gone, in which case it's just a dead body hanging around, or you hang around the body yourself, which means you can't go on to a better life. So either way, attachment to the body drags you down and creates some burdens for other people. So the question is, what do you do with it? Well, you do good with it. That's the essence of the body. The Buddha talks about finding the essence in your body, meaning that you learn how to practice good generosity, use their body to learn about the Dharma, use it to practice virtue, meditation. This is where you can find something of essential worth inside the body. We had the question the other day at the Q&A, what is the essence of the teaching? Well, the essence of the teaching is release. Release can be found through the practices we do with the body. In fact, they say it's actually touched at the body, which means that it's a total experience. It's not just an idea. It's a total experience. So as we sit down to meditate, sitting here with our bodies, remind yourself what's good about the body. What's good about the body is that you can create a sense of well-being through the breath. And as you get to know the breath, you get to know the mind. There have been some people who have asked, why is it that we focus on the breath? After all, when you die, the breath is going to end, and where will that lead you? If all we learned about was the breath, then we would be in trouble. But the fact is that as you're getting the mind to stay with the breath is like a mirror for the mind. You begin to see things in the mind you wouldn't have seen otherwise. And particularly when you follow the Buddha's instructions on fabrication, you see how the way you breathe has an effect on how you experience the body. And then you see how your perceptions and feelings, as the Buddha says, fabricate the mind. And the way you talk to yourself is going to fabricate the way you experience both the body and the mind. So it's this process of fabrication that you're getting to know. And when you see the process of fabrication, get really sensitive to it, understand it. That's when you can learn to go beyond it. If you're not sensitive to it, you will continue to mistake fabricated things for something that's reliable and something you can hold on to forever. Well, there are no eternal fabrications. But if you're not sensitive to what's actually going on, you say, well, it seems sturdy enough to me. After all, you've got this awareness that seems to go from moment to moment to moment. That's always there. That seems to be something solid and reliable. But the Buddha says, no, that's fabricated too. And when you learn that lesson, you've learned an awful lot. So when you approach the body in the right way, you can get some real good out of it. And as for what remains, you can put it aside. As the Buddha said, when you've seen the true Dharma, in other words, you've had your first glimpse of the deathless, allows you to face the death of the body with a lot less fear. Because you realize the death of the body doesn't touch the deathless. So this is one of the reasons why we practice letting go so much. Because it's something we gain in return. You look at the duties with regard to the Four Noble Truths. That duty for the Second Noble Truth, the cause of suffering, is to abandon it. Because it's when you abandon the cause, that's when you can solve the problem of that suffering. And you look at the Third Noble Truth, and that actually is the abandoning, where you actually successfully abandon the craving. But there's a duty there on top of that, and that's the duty to be very clear about what's happening, to verify it for yourself that this is what you're doing. So you need to do two things, let go and be aware at the same time. This is precisely why the path is effective. I guess it's basically factors of letting go and developing qualities of alertness, awareness, concentration, discernment, so you can really see what's happening and appreciate what's happening. Verify yourself, for yourself, what's happening as you let go. So it's not simply letting go, and that's going to be enough. You have to be alert to what you're doing as you let go, because you're going to be letting go in stages. If you let go of everything, that would include letting go of the path, and then you'd be in a lot of trouble. You let go of the path only when it's done its work. You have to hold on in the meantime. So there's a skill in letting go. Like when you're concentrating here. The Buddha's instructions are one that you stay focused. The word is anupassana, that you continue to follow and watch one thing, in this case would be the breath. At the same time, you subdue or let go of greed and distress with reference to the world. So you're developing your concentration as you let go of everything that gets in the way of concentration. You're holding on to the object of concentration as you let go of the hindrances. And behind all this, you hold on to the idea that you're going to benefit from this. It's interesting that one of the Buddha's motivations for letting go of things that are not self, he says, it will be for your long-term welfare and happiness. There's a you in there. It's a provisional you. But there's a sense that you're going to benefit from this. You hold on to that. Because otherwise it's hard to let go of things. You need that as motivation. Otherwise you say, gosh, I've got these nice pleasures right now, and it'd be a shame to let them go, because who knows when they're going to come again. It's hard to follow any path that way. But we're on a path where we have a sense that we're going to benefit from this. So we're willing to let go of things right now that are attractive to us. The Buddha never denies it. The aggregates give their pleasures. But there's something better to do with them than just wallow around in the pleasures. We can use the aggregates and create a path. You can think of the aggregates as pieces of wood. You can take the wood and you can build a fire with it and burn yourself with the fire, which is what we do most of the time. Or instead of burning it, you can create a bridge to take you across the river. The aggregates have their uses, but the kind of determined, steady work that would be required in building a bridge requires that you have a steady motivation. So you hold on to the sense, okay, you're going to benefit from this. And you keep at it. So as you let go of some things and hold on to others. Letting go is a skill. And it's only when the path has gotten you to the other side, that's when you let go of it. So there are some things we hold on to, even here in the body. You hold on to the fact you've got this body right now. Make the best use of it. Use it to be generous. Use it to be virtuous. Take care of it so it has the strength that you can continue to practice meditation. You hold on to that much. But as for all the other attachments and stories and narratives and whatnot that we build around the body, those are best let go. When you have this attitude toward the body and this attitude toward your mind, then in John Lee's image, you squeeze the juice out of them, and then you can throw away the rind. Because you've got the nourishing part.